for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Field, back with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. No Dave Anderson this week with work commitments kicking in for him again. And a slightly shorter, maybe slightly different show than even was planned. Very much mirrors the non-league football of our time. Now, like the rest of the world, for many in non-league, this is a time of uncertainty and a time of change, but it's also a time to pull together. Look, not just at the short-term remedies, but the long-term solutions too. There's going to be lots of upset, lots of disagreement, but we need to make sure that non-league is stronger together and moving forward. So plenty to discuss, plenty to think about. Let's get matters underway. Let's start off with it's another weird week. The whole show's had to be reformatted. We've had to rethink everything. So we'll start off this week with the week's non-league news. Well, actually, the hottest news of the hour. It's back over to Non-League Paper Towers, and it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to editor at large, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Confused, I think. We spoke last week about the need for clarification, and a week on, we've sort of got some clarification, but it just looks like step three and step four at the moment continues its suspension until at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah, as you say, the statement's just come out, hasn't it? And saying a substantial number of clubs have voted for that proposition for the sort of the pause to continue and review in a couple of weeks. It's not quite sort of saying that definitively that's definitely what's happening, is it? But it seems like there needs to be some approval from the Football Association. So I think it's kind of overall generally probably what we're expecting, kind of from the noises that we've been hearing over the last sort of couple of days, that this is kind of what would happen. So that seems to be where we are at the moment, in what's sort of been this kind of ongoing challenges throughout this season, and it looks like we're not quite going to get step three and four back just yet.
Yeah, and there's obviously lots of discussion as to, you know, is that the end of the season? I don't think, you know, it is. There's always a solution. There's a way around it. The statement ends with the matter has been considered today and is subject to comment by the FA. So it's not even suggesting that the FA need to ratify anything, which we know, you know, is a standard thing in most statements we get nowadays. But the FA will comment on it, and it makes me wonder whether they've maybe thrown something at the FA to ask them to help out. But I think that the consideration of clubs, and we say there's a substantial number of clubs in agreement with the proposition, was that we've got so many clubs that are in Tier 3, which have, they're not allowed fans in at the ground, and they've also been advised against travel in and out, even for the football work. And I think in the Northern Premier, there's 45 clubs in Tier 3. And one of the things I was pointing out was the three leagues are working together, which is a good thing, because it's, say the Isthmian League have only got 14 teams in Tier 3. Say if they were able to complete their season, that season could become pointless if the Northern Premier couldn't complete their season, because we still couldn't have promotion and relegation. That all the leagues need to work together. Non-league needs to work together to give it more clout when it's talking to the FA, when it's talking to the government, but it also needs to work together so that the whole system doesn't fall apart.
Yeah, I think that's you're spot on. I mean, I know that everyone will sort of see it through their own prism and their own situation, and there will be clubs who think, well, we've just got to get going, and I totally understand that. I see it from both sides, but there is that bigger picture of the promotion and relegation, and then the sort of, you're getting into integrity of competitions and all that kind of those areas. If some clubs are playing and other leagues aren't at the same levels and even within the same, you know, under the same umbrellas, and it's just becomes a very sort of messy situation. You know, the Northern Premier League as you said, Leeds can't start because they're, you know, tier three. They can't have fans through the turnstiles, and it just becomes complete. That's been the position all along. That can't, you know, it's not viable. And I think the fact that the leagues are together, they've now sort of, you know, when Pitching In came in and started the sponsorship in the summer, we kind of gone forward with this broad this branding of sort of the Trident League to kind of be that kind of united presence, which I think's the right thing to do, because I think one of the things now, and it says in there about, and this is one of the big discussions been ongoing, is about this money that's coming down, this winter sport like relief that's coming down, where 80% of it is going to be loans, and that's absolutely no good to these clubs. Why would you take out a loan when you don't know what you sort of, you know, when you're going to be allowed to, when you're going to get,
well, it's
money
a bit like
through the tills.
It's a bit like being told you're going to be made redundant, and then you go to the bank and ask for a mortgage. You know, in the real world, they wouldn't give it to you.
And why would you put yourself in that position? The clubs, you know, it's not a solution. And you just sort of understand that there is sort of lobbying for this money to become grants. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because there's so many industries that are across the country that are struggling, and the government have got a lot of people to kind of please. But we're in it. We know the sort of the far-reaching effects of football, particularly at these levels, and how deep into the communities these clubs go. And it's just, they've gone from having, you know, difficult years as it is anyway, with the season finishing, not having functions and everything going on through their clubs through the end of last season, and the presentation nights they might have for, you know, like their youth teams that brings money in through the bar, and all these kind of things they haven't had for a long time. And they've had a bit of football come back with crowds, limited crowds, so they haven't, you know, some clubs who would get more than what they're allowed in have been able to go without, and sort of no major sort of funding. There's obviously has been bits of funding, isn't there, but no sort of major funding, kind of like the National League has probably had, when they've been the money that they got through the National Lottery to start their season behind closed doors. And now they're going to be allowed fans back in at those levels. Again, limited numbers, and as long as you're not in tier three. But step three, four, particularly, just find itself stuck. And there's the leads at step five and six as well, who are in the same position. And this is the real fear, I guess.
And I think it's probably causing you a headache as to what football's coming up to be covered over the weekend, because we've got lots of step five and below action continuing, including I think the combined counties and United Counties League starting straight back this weekend, but others like the North East Counties League, they've suspended until January at least, and at least with the three leagues at step three and four that working together, I think it just gives them a bit more credence when they're trying to put this argument across to government and also to fans as well. I think fans, we're all fans. We want to be going to watch some football. We want to be able to stand alongside our friends on the terraces. But we're in a certain situation. But I think fans need to understand that even at step three and four, where we've had games and fans have been able to go in there, as you mentioned, that there's a number of clubs that have been spending money they didn't have to put games on to make a loss, and that can't continue forever.
No, it can't. And I think now we're getting, except when it first happened in March, and it was all clubs are going to go here, the majority have managed to get through to everybody's credit. Now he's sort of really, really worrying about actually what this sort of next period is going to be. And you know, people in football know that, the FA know that, the leagues know that, they know how difficult this is. I don't think that sort of clubs have necessarily been forgotten, like people feel they are, by these sort of people. There are elements of the game that probably aren't, you know, could be helping out these levels, but it is a real worry. I mean, there are clubs that we've spoke to that have voted kind of in favour of this proposition, kind of in solidarity with the other clubs.
Yes,
who are in tier three and struggling. So, you know, we absolutely all want football to be back on, but there is this kind of bigger picture, and is a united voice gonna hopefully amplify kind of what this level, these levels of the game need. I mean, that's what you'd hope would help, I guess, all being together.
Yeah, and even, you know, we've had revised FA COVID guidance this week, and, you know, the various step and tier specific crowd limits, but we've still got that anomaly where the local authorities are responsible for public health at each of these grounds, and already there's much debate and differences of opinion across the country as to whether tea huts can be opened as a takeaway and if they fall foul of hospitality restrictions, and there needs to be that solidarity so that we can get a clearer picture and a fairer level playing field for every club that's trying to survive.
Yeah, this is the problem pre lockdown too, isn't it? Where some clubs are having to jump through different hoops to others because of their local authorities, and kind of the people we've been speaking to, you know, sort of trying to stress and urge that point that the clubs having good relationships with their local authorities and the people who are sort of looking after this kind of side of things is absolutely vital. Unfortunately, the other side of it is this is another thing for people who are running these clubs, the volunteers who are keeping these clubs going and putting all these out. It's another stress and strain on them on what's already been a very stressful period as it is with everything they've been having to try and do. And I sort of just get a sense of talking to people, there's just a real kind of fatigue now. Mm. People are just a bit worn out, and that's kind of another worrying side of this. You know, what's the long term effect going to be of this whole period anyway? Are people going to sort of end up walking away from the game as well?
We've always had these concerns about how we keep volunteers within the game, and the current situation's not helping. The clarification, I'll go back to that clarification point. In amongst all of this, the leagues being suspended, it still looks like we're going to have the FA Vars and FA Trophy back midweek. And ironically, I think one of those games is Ashton, who are in Tier 3 against South Shields, which isn't possible in the league as the home side are in Tier 3, but it does look like it might be possible in the FA Trophy. And I think that clarification and that... We just need some guidance from above, really, don't we?
Yeah, I think it is. Clarification has kind of been one of the most used words through this whole period, isn't it? Waiting for clarification, guidance, and all this kind of thing. And yeah, at the moment it seems that the kind of element that the trophy and the Vars carries on. We've got Vars games this weekend, and yeah, it's just, I can see it from all different points of view, and it's just a really, really difficult situation that we're kind of all facing, I guess.
Yeah, and I think people also need to understand that we're in the middle of the pandemic as well, which is it's still hitting football, even where football's decided it will carry on. So I think this week we've had Darlington, we've had Dover, Billericay, Telford, positive COVID tests, which has halted their ability to play fixtures, train, and... We all want football back, but perhaps we need some reality too. You know, longer term thinking about the implications on football, especially at our level.
Yeah, so it's difficult, isn't it? We sort of come kind of immune to, you know, sort of blasé about kind of the figures that come out and things, and we see there's this hope of this vaccine now that can move us back towards normal, but from sort of things here today, it's going to be several months down the line anyway, so this isn't going to be just let's just wait and then a couple of weeks time we'll get going, and all, you know, this is going to keep kind of rolling on, you know, right through the season. It sort of takes you back to March when it all kind of first broke out at the beginning, sort of thinking, well, maybe it'll be a couple of weeks off and then come back and have to squeeze some fixtures in. But when you look back now, that was kind of a silly thing to think, but that was kind of, you almost deny it a little bit, don't you, in your own minds, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the biggest frustration that I've got, certainly, is that back then, I was discussing with your colleague David Richardson about football needing to look at the wider implications and sort of longer term, and everything, and you understand what it is, but people acted short term because we wanted to get football back, but we're now... almost taking two steps forward and three steps back. And we just need to look at the wider picture of non-league. And we don't want to make it all doom and gloom either. We should, of course, mention it's been a great week in terms of non-league impact on the season's FA Cup. You know, we had some great matches last weekend, some fantastic third round ties for the four non-league clubs left in the competition with home ties for all of them. Last week we had Neil Young on the show for Marine, and he was talking about how busy his week had been pre that second round. I reckon he's going to find out how he can survive without sleep in the coming weeks.
Well, actually, yeah, I spoke to Neil today, and he's it's gone kind of crazy since they beat Havant on Sunday, and it's kind of that kind of high and buzz of that of reaching the third round. I think he said he went home and watched Arsenal v Wolves on the telly, and then first thing in the morning he was kind of on radio and doing interviews for that, and they had all sorts of other requests from all over, and camera crews down the ground. Then obviously they. Monday night they're at the ground for the draw, and they put out Tottenham, and it's kind of gone even more hectic since then. You know, to have Jose Mourinho going down to Marine is going to be quite something. And I spoke to Jamie Vermiglio as well sort of earlier this evening, and Chorley manager, and obviously they beat Peterborough on Saturday, and they've got Derby County and sort of similar things, and it's just gone kind of crazy. And all the interest, and I guess that's one of the things, isn't it? This is what these are the moments, these are the things that everyone's missing and yearning for and wanting, and it's kind of where we're seeing this, you know, pause again, and this whole situation, it's kind of been that's being sort of denied of people again, but it has been fantastic for those clubs, fantastic draws, Stockport getting West Ham, Bournemouth have got Millwall, you know, you couldn't really ask for much more. Getting, you know, Premier League and Championship clubs, and you sort of hope that the TV cameras will be hopefully all of them, and that will, you know, bring in the extra profile as well, which is great for non-league football. Fantastic for the people involved, and to be planning for that in January is quite incredible. Obviously with Marine, they're kind of facing this situation where they might not play another competitive game. They've got a trophy game on Tuesday night against Hyde. You know, if they get knocked out of that, will they play another competitive game before the Tottenham one? That's kind of one of the things that will be going through their head. So it's kind of just a bizarre sort of situation all around, but some real light in what's been a pretty difficult season with those clubs getting through at the weekend.
Yeah, we've mentioned a few times that 2020 is going to be one of those where it's going to be referred to in many sports quiz for years to come, and something like the Marine not being able to play a competitive game apart from in the FA Cup is certainly one. I'm sure Phil Annetts is super excited about the stats and facts that will come from that, but it also shows the product that is non-league and how fantastic it is, and that's where this solidarity I keep coming back to is so important, because non-league as a product needs to work together to make sure that once this pandemic is behind us, and hopefully there is a route out or a way to continue to a different normality, that non-league as a whole can benefit, and people can embrace non-league football for all the right things and what it's all about.
Yeah, I think through these whole last few months, I think this whole year now, it's all merging into one. But I think we've seen a lot of the best of non-league football, what people have been doing, and when there's been no games, kind of how clubs have rallied around in their communities and the things they've done for people, and we've had clubs dropping off prescriptions and food packages and doing all these things. And we have seen, you know, that sort of non-league spirit and that community kind of come out through this whole period. Obviously, there's always, you know, it's all going to be the fallouts and everything that is happening. And, you know, I know sort of lots of people aren't going to be happy about this current situation, but it is we have got this beautiful, unique sort of system in this country, which you should be really proud of. And it might, this whole COVID situation might change the way that looks. It might evolve further as it has evolved over the years anyway. But, you know, we should be sort of standing up for that. And that's, I guess, where we sort of come back to the money and the grants that are needed, particularly further down, because these clubs below the National League and steps three and down really need help. And they do get some, and they do, you know, you can't complain about what they have had. But, you know, now we're in a real situation where clubs really need that sort of support from people who maybe don't sort of quite understand what this game's about. It's to kind of come down and look and see what's actually going on, you know, right in the heartland of the game in this country, I guess.
Yeah, and well, the people that, as you say, are going to disagree with the decision and not be happy, it's still great. I still like the fact that they're passionate about non-league football. That's important to me. And you know, if we're going to move forward, we can't knock the passion out of people, because we'll just become as sterile as football higher up, and that's not what we want. Before I let you go, I guess we should at least make mention of the news announced this week that the CEO at the National League, Michael Tattersall, will be leaving at the end of the year to pursue outside football interests. 5 years in the post, it's quite a long time, actually, particularly in a football role nowadays. But is that likely to mean a shake-up at the National League, you think?
Well, I mean, yes. Yeah, so one of those jobs, I think that's probably five years longer than I'd want to do it. you know, the National League is sort of a lot of profile. Obviously, yeah, it's coming in quite a surprise. Don't know a huge amount. Sort of the ins and outs of it, but sort of surprise, I guess, that Michael's leaving quite so quickly as well at the end of December, at the end of the month. He's not waiting till the end of the season, so it's going to be, you know, it's obviously a, you know, attention now will be to who's going to kind of come in and step in and kind of step in quite quickly, and also what is a quite challenging time for the National League and its club still. You know, they're beginning to welcome fans back in limited numbers, but it's a large number of clubs still in Tier 3, and how long is that going to go on for? So it's quite a job for someone to be taking on.
Yeah. So you've already mentioned we've got some Vars games, we've got National League games, obviously, we've got all the reaction to everything else that's been going on that we've discussed. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Well, yes. If I could get some things typed up, then...
if you think you're getting strange calls from strange men on a Thursday evening, yeah.
Keep strange bloke at the non-league show. Well, I mean, Tim, of course, we can't go any further without mentioning that your good self will have a column in this Sunday's paper. And what more do we need to highlight? Because that's you're back and you're getting your quill out and you're going to talk us through some of your thoughts on this situation, aren't you?
I'm sharpening that quill. It's going to have to be redrafted. I can feel an all-nighter coming on just to make sure that it gets written in time for the weekend's paper.
That's right. As long as it's in by 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, so we can get it all on the page and sort of, that's not a problem, mate.
I like the team effort. There's always a all working together. Well, Matt, I suppose I better let you go and write up some of those bits, and I'll go back to my column and try and get that sorted. And we'll get on with the show. It's a weird week, but I'm glad that you're able to try and make some sense of it with me. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks very much.
So let's talk to a club that know all about the pressures and costs of not playing football while still having a club to run. Back in late September, as non-league readied itself to get back underway for the first time this season, the board at Merthyr Town made the heart-wrenching decision to suspend football in all its operations and withdraw from this season from the Southern League due to the implications and burdens of COVID-19. Just over 2 months on, and I'm pleased to see the club, despite going through harsh lockdown measures in Wales, it does appear to be thriving. So to tell us more, it's a welcome to the Non-League Football Show to Secretary at Merthyr Town, Jack Hodgkins. Welcome, Jack.
Hi, nice to be on. It'd be great to speak to you and obviously hopefully share our views and a little bit of insight for what clubs may have to come in the near future.
Well, that's it. We It really must have been a tough decision back in September. After all, you're a football club and you're fan-owned as well. So quite often hindsight is used as a you-were-wrong type flag. But on this occasion, it appears it may well have been that you've made the best decision in football all year.
I mean, looking on it now, it seems like a stroke of genius at the time. At the time of the decision, like you said, with the last season ending so prematurely, everybody was eager to get back into the ground, watch a game and hopefully start up again. And then obviously when the decision was made, a lot of people were unhappy with it originally because they wanted to watch their team this season. I think there was arguments for and against the decision at the time. And maybe the way that the club handled it with this fan ownership model was something to be desired, and certainly could have been improved on. But now looking on it 4 months down the line, I think it's absolutely the correct decision, and it's potentially saved the long-term security of the club.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's the thing that I've been, you know, I'm a football fan. I've been involved with my football club for nearly 25 years. I've been doing this show, nearly 15 years we've been going here. I love football. I love being involved in my football club. But we need to look, perhaps, now is the ideal opportunity to look at the long-term future of non-league football. And I think that's what you've done, because although the football activities stopped, as a club, you seem to be thriving.
Yeah, like I said, we were very lucky that the facilities that we got at the club, are arguably amongst the best in non-league in terms of having a club out. You know, the constant use of the pitch, thanks to it being an artificial surface. And also, you know, same as many non-league clubs, the Merthyr Football Club is the focal point of the town in some ways. All sort of junior teams within the near area use the facility multiple times a week. We have a women's team that's still currently playing under the Welsh League system, so they've recently started back. We have walking football. Cardiff City use our facilities as an academy system. So off the field, well, away from the first team activities, like you said, the club has been doing quite well. The frustrating thing is the 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, where you usually have the 400 or 500 fans walking up the driveway to the game, expecting to see Merthyr Town playing. Unfortunately, they have to watch whatever's on the TV in the clubhouse, which is the frustrating thing.
And what's happened to the first team men's football? Where I think even last year's squad, they've been back for pre-season training as well. Are they all on hold as well?
Well, it's been a mixture, really. From last season's squad, 9 players had originally left before this season was due to start, due to moving to elsewhere in the English and the Welsh system. So there was essentially a good crop of players who had signed ahead of this season, who were new to the club anyway, hadn't been here previously, and like I said, it was a new experience for them. So that was quite exciting from a fan's point of view. It was the fact that, you know, we made 8 signings ahead of the season, which we haven't had a turnaround of that of players at Merthyr for a long while. And then obviously, when the decision came, the players were told a couple of days beforehand of the possible situation that might develop, which allowed some of them to find clubs fairly quickly. But there's still a couple of players who haven't moved anywhere. Just sort of waiting around to see what comes. But obviously with the restrictions in Wales being slightly different to those in England, a couple of players couldn't travel to play over the border. And obviously there's no football being played in Wales at the moment, apart from the Welsh Premier. And that was the difficulty for some of the players to find clubs in there then. So some have played, some haven't, and it'll be interesting to see next season if hopefully some of them can return, or if not, at least I hope from a personal point of view that they can find a club and carry on playing football, because I'm sure there's nothing worse than being told that you're not going to be able to play for a season through no fault of your own, really.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, Merthyr, looking at what you've done, it's a great model to show how a club is a community, and I think that's the important thing. I mean, I'm looking at the things that have been going on. I've seen Sunday lunches, I've seen takeaways. You've had all these other lockdown measures and COVID restrictions in Wales, as you say, different from England, but you've been able to put some big screen football on to get people in to use the facilities. I think there's even plans for Santa to visit the ground as well. I mean, yeah. Ironically, without the burdens of football, you've had more time to build the football club and build a community football club.
Yeah, absolutely, and like I mentioned previously, the one thing that we're quite lucky is that the clubhouse, it's a brilliant facility and it is quite a focal point of the community. So off the field, the last sort of 18 months to 2 years, we've done really well in terms of functions, events, and running things that a football club need to run to ensure that the first team are able to play on a Saturday. And that's been the one positive is that, we get a good core supporters who use the facilities through the week, who come into the clubhouse to have a drink, like you said, have Sunday lunches, have parties and birthdays there and so on. And thankfully, that's continued. Obviously, the restrictions has made it a little bit more difficult. But we sort of adapt as and when we can. Obviously, with the new ones coming in this weekend now, with no alcohol being allowed to be sold in Wales, that's thrown up this new set of challenges. So, like I said, the Sunday lunches can still go ahead and the Santa's grotto that's been planned can still go ahead. It's just, it's adapting as and when we need to, really. And thankfully, we've got a good core volunteers and staff of the club who've been tremendous, to be fair, right through it all. And I don't think without them, and like I said, even the decision that was made to mothball for the season, which was the term, like you said, it's maybe come across as a great decision now, but at the time there's a lot of doubts and we've had to work to ensure that decision was the correct one.
And work hard you have, and I assume did you get the nod from the FA that you can stay in this level when the new season starts up next year, so you'll be back in at step three?
Yeah, so obviously we were in conversation with the Southern League and we were told that we wouldn't be penalised for the decision because obviously it was a decision that had to be made that wasn't our fault really. It was the restrictions in Wales which meant that we wouldn't be allowed to have had any fans at all, despite obviously the Southern League having fans for every other club in the league. So that was a challenge. In terms of setting up our ground to be COVID safe, it was, it was a task that we had to do. We got it set up ready because we were meant to be playing Poole Town in the FA Cup on the Saturday. And it was the Friday that the decision was made that we weren't going to continue. So, like I said, we've got that sort of, well, not security, but we've got that assurance, really, that the option is there to go back into the Southern League Premier next season, which is something we're very thankful for. I think at this moment in time, it's not something that we would have wanted to lose. So we're very grateful for that. Obviously, it depends on how the Southern League goes this season and how they plan ready for next year, because even though we expected this, the COVID virus to disappear, certainly stayed a lot longer than what we planned. And even with a vaccine, there's no guarantee that this season's going to finish as planned. And obviously, it'll follow on to next year then.
Yeah, and we're saying that with hindsight, that what a great decision it was. I mean, obviously, the clubs that like my own club, Hayes and Yedding, in that division that you would have been playing, the clubs have been spending money that they didn't really have to put games on, in many cases, making a loss because they couldn't get the crowds through the doors or get the other revenue streams going. So, to be honest, it's almost as if it was a broken model before COVID, and the current pandemic has only highlighted in certain cases worsened the situation, which shows that maybe your model, that the community space, the community focused model, is a better one that non-league football clubs be looking at for a longer term solution?
Yeah, absolutely. And we came to the football club on a match, there'd be many discussions of, you know, is community and fan ownership the way forward, or does it throw up this hindrances? And I think both of them have been visited by every club who's considered the fan ownership model and the community aspect. Thankfully, the community side of things in Merthyr is quite strong, and it allows us to, like you said, still survive as a club, even though we haven't got any first-team football this year. Like you said, don't get me wrong, it's nice sometimes to have plenty of money and be able to get all the best players that you can in, and also, you know, ensure sort of success on the field. But I think that's what sort of sums up Merthyr, really, is that despite we might not have that side of things with the financial benefit, we've got that community, and it sort of shadows itself onto the first team, from my personal point of view. I'm sure there's many other fans and owners who share that view.
Mm. Yeah, we all love success and winning and celebrating trophies and things like that. But at the end of the day, you're a fan of your football club rather than a fan of just the success. Because if you want to be a fan of success, you'd be somewhere else following higher up the pyramid, I guess. I want this to be a celebration, really, of how well you guys have done. Because again, looking, we're in the middle of a pandemic. You've stopped playing football, which is the main focus of, you know, of your being. But you've also brought on board two new shirt sponsors, as far as I'm aware. There's been signed memorabilia, fundraising auctions. There's been new merchandise launched. There's plenty to be getting on with, and hopefully by the new season does come about, you'll be in a very strong place as a club.
Yeah, like you said, in terms of the shirt sponsorship, as you mentioned, you know, thankfully the sponsors that we did get in understood the situation we're in, and, you know, they're happy to continue for next season, which is always a benefit. Yeah, and like you said, in terms of signed memorabilia, we're very fortunate that we're a club with some very rich history within the non-league system and within Wales. So people, you know, still have that attraction to Merthyr Football Club, even though they may not watch us on a Saturday, but they may have been fans in the past, and, you know, exiled fans who live up and down the country, really. You know, you always see when we play away games in the London area, there's always a good core of 20, 30 fans who attend those games, who live in that sort of area and can only travel to those games now. And thankfully, they've been supporting us off the field. Even though they can't watch their team play, they're still supporting by doing fundraising events and sponsorship opportunities. And we can only be thankful for that. And, you know, without that kind of support, we wouldn't be able to do as well off the field without our first team this season than if they weren't supporting us. So, as secretary of the club, I can only thank fans for that. It's been fantastic, to be fair.
Yeah, and a new board voted in too as well. So, lots of new energy, new ideas, I'm sure, coming on board as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being a fan-owned club, you know, it's not a task that everybody wants to take upon themselves to be sort of the board of the club and be that point of contact. Thankfully, we've had a good amount of people standing in the recent elections, which means we now got a full board of 12 people. And like you said, there's a mixture of, you know, youth and older heads on there. There's a couple of people who've been involved in businesses outside of football who can hopefully lend a hand and, you know, share their ideas. So it's going to be exciting. Like I said, I've been appointed on the board myself, being a younger head within football. Like you said, hopefully I can bring some new ideas that may not have been brought before. So, yeah, it's quite exciting, like you said.
Well, I was going to mention it. I mean, if you don't mind me saying, Jack, and I don't want to upset any of my many friends across the country who are secretaries, but you're quite young to be a football secretary. I mean, I call it the most stressful job in football. You've obviously got no international clearance to worry about, at least this season, but how did you end up in that role?
Well, like I say, my family have been involved with the club for over 40 years. And, you know, my father was on the board at the time of when Merthyr were in the conference and, you know, we're playing Atalanta and playing in the Welsh Cup and so on. Arguably, you know, the glory period of the club. So I've been brought up here since I was, you know, 2 years of age, watching on every Saturday. The post became available just over 2 years ago. And I was quite close friends with the previous secretary. Sort of took it upon myself to ask him if he could sort of show me the way, submitting my application to the club, and thankfully I was successful. Like you said, a lot of people don't realise the tasks that they take on yourself, but it's a role that I've enjoyed. You know, I'm even though it's on a volunteer basis, I'm working for the club that I've followed since I was really, really young, despite me only being 21, 22 now. But it's a role that I love and I enjoy. So.
Well, it's brilliant that have you on board. As someone that got involved with my football club at a similar age, once you're gripped, it doesn't let go, does it? And it is part of your family.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, sometimes, you know, on a match day and we may have lost or something like that, and you're still a fan at the end of the day. You get as frustrated as well you would if you're standing on the terraces watching it. But it's a role that hopefully can lead me into something a bit more long-term within the game. You know, thankfully, I've been very fortunate to be able to have some work experiences with the Welsh FA, Swansea City Football Club previously as well. So I think that's given me a bit of a boost, despite me being a young age, is that I've worked in those sort of elite environments, despite it only being short time periods. I think that's definitely helped me in my role at the club, and hopefully it's something that can continue to help me in the future as well.
And it's definitely a good thing that someone that's cut their teeth and learnt about the game at non-league level is able to advise people across the football the pyramid, the all the authorities and things like that, because we need to make sure that our voice is heard there. Jack, it's been fantastic getting you on the non-league football show. I'm so pleased that Merthyr have found some light in the darkness, shall we say, and are continuing to move on as a football club, and I will keep monitoring your progress, and hopefully other clubs, you know, in a similar situation where they can't play football maybe at the moment, we'll take heed and take a lead from some of those initiatives that you're putting in place. But Jack, thanks for joining us on the show, and best of luck for the future.
No problem, it's been a pleasure, and it's been great to speak to you, and hopefully speak again in the near future.
It's been a tough year with perhaps a continued lack of football as it looks like now, and it all brings football to the fore and the different thoughts to the fore as well, particularly over the festive season. Mental health for all of us should be something we're considering and open about, and our next guests are no stranger to non-league football and no strangers to each other either, having been teammates on the field, now teammates off the field, as they look to support those in the game with their mental health. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Football Flow's Dean Hooper and Dominic Sterling.
Thank you very much.
What, chaps, I know this support system, it's been years in the planning, but Dean, what is Football Flow and what's it seeking to offer?
Yeah, we're 6 months ago, Dom and I got together, really. We've been planning this probably longer as well. We just want to predominantly look after the non-league. I think, you know, obviously lucky myself to have been a professional. And obviously there's a system in place which everybody's aware of. The PFA have got a sporting chance. But we both discussed it. We looked at it, and there's nothing below that level. So there's a big fallout for me.
And this is something that I constantly go on about. I've been going on about it for probably too many years, and people have probably got fed up with me shouting about it. Non-league is such an essential part of football across the country, but we miss out on so many things. We don't have the same support network that higher up, where there's more resources available, can buy. Now, Dom, you've been in this space for a long while now, but it does seem as though football's never before needed this kind of service before as now. This is the moment that football is in real need of someone to put their arm around them.
Yeah, and I'd say it's more of an emotional release as well, because football is more than football. It's a community. It's where everyone gets together. There's jobs at stake, whereby it's like a family. And if you don't really have your family support there, sometimes things fall apart. And when I talk about jobs and talking about, people might lose jobs in a non-league, which means they can't feed their families, they can't feed their family. You think about the wider community, they can't shop in the local community, which means that whole structure within that local community falls down. So it has bigger implications rather than what's happening at that local level.
And it's also at this time as well, where people aren't even able to see their close family themselves. We got Christmas coming up and the various alterations that allows. But people it's very easy to become isolated and lonely in this current circumstances.
Absolutely. I think, you're spot on. And we don't want to just look after, which we are actively looking after, players, managers and staff within the league. And above, to be fair, we've got a couple of professional people that we look after. But it's the fans as well. I think we've only just literally discussing it. We've got a couple of fans that are going to come on board, and we're going to have a situation. We're not sure what we're going to do for the fans, as in text form, whether it's a service like that. But within our website structure, which hopefully is only a couple of weeks away, we'll definitely have something for the fans, because I think that inclusiveness is very important. And I think, as you well know, Tim, we've discussed enough that higher levels you go, that gets lost a little. I think it's turning around. I just think non-league's always been, as Dom rightly said, that family feel.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Anderson speaks almost every week, and we speak about managers, the modern day gaffer being more like a social worker as well as a coach, which probably suggests that there's need for managers and would-be managers to get their own sort of training and grounding and an understanding of what they need to be doing.
And I think it's quite important to say managers, because they've got pressures from below and above. So they've got pressures from the chairman, and they're kind of in between the chairman and the players as well. So the strain they're receiving, trying to keep the whole club together and being the fulcrum of what it's about, there's even more strain on managers than anyone else within clubs as well. So it's good that you mentioned managers, because I think managers do sometimes get a bad reputation for being volatile, being temperamental, being sometimes one end of the spectrum of mental health to the other end of the spectrum of mental health at the same time. So they need as much support as anyone else within the industry.
And in this wider world with social media as well, you sometimes managers almost feel that they have to be on there and they have to respond on a Saturday night to fans. And it's a whole bundle of emotions on Saturday. And I think I learned very early on, you tend not to talk to a manager on a Saturday evening, because whether he's won or lost, he needs to focus on what's gone on in the game. But I guess what you guys are trying to do is to get people to understand their own position and how they can enjoy life more.
Absolutely, yeah, it is that, Tim. It's a bubble that is very hard to escape, and through the experience that we've had already with certain managers, obviously we're not mentioning names or anything, but it's having that escapism, having something different from football, because they live and breathe it. They have to, like you rightly said, with the social media, their phones are going 24/7. I mean, you're in Hayes's club, so you understand what Paul, perhaps Richard, to a lesser extent, but still very much involved. That's a lot of strain to take on, and they need someone to talk to. And outside of that bubble, I think, is essential, and that's where we play that part.
Yeah,
and going on from what Dean said as well, it's more about work-life integration, because now we've got these phones, now we're completely attached to work and 24/7. Mm. So as a football manager, having that time to switch off, you find it very hard because psychologically your phone is always buzzing away, where it's a player who's in a dilemma or a player who feels really good about how he's performed, or you as a manager just thinking about the next game going on. So you never really switched off. You're always thinking about the next thing, the next game. And because the industry is so performance related, you don't really get a chance to switch off because you have three bad results and that's you. You're thinking about your job, thinking about your future, again, thinking about your family and thinking about everything else around that. So it can be quite stressful.
I think that's the players as well, though. Dom, obviously, it takes in that all of that. And the fans now, it's highlighted massively. As a fan myself of football, you know, you want that stress, you want that stress release, and I get it. And often, Tim, as you well know, especially non-league, well, throughout football, to be fair, there's people's lives, that football club. It really is. So, yeah, I think we've got something to offer, definitely. And perhaps you're right in the timing of it. It's strange that, you know, obviously these strange times that we've decided to go for it. And yeah, we're pushing all the right buttons at the moment. We've got a big meeting with the PR people tomorrow. We've got plenty of people pecking at us that, you know, financially want to back us because they realise the potential with it. But we want to keep that organic growth and we want to keep our feet on the ground. We want to be humble.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you say about the balance. And there's almost this mindset in modern society, you're not just in football, that you need to be on top of everything. You need to be on this social network, that social network. You need to respond within 5 minutes. And, you know, I often say to people when I'm teaching them how to use social media, just take a step back, give it 5 minutes before you respond, because you might just, it's very easy to say the wrong things or just, you know, not get the connotation across that you were wanting. Yeah, it was interesting. We spoke to Ian Everett last year, the year before, the Barrow manager, he'd actually agreed with his wife that he turned off his phone at 7 o'clock every evening when he didn't have a game. And then no one could get to him until the morning, which, you know, Dave Anderson and I both stepped back thinking, whoa. But it seemed to be successful. He's gone on and proven that it can work.
It can, yeah. No, I agree with that. But then if you're up and coming, Tim, like anything, you've got to put yourself out there, haven't you? Whatever industry, you know, what you're doing, for instance, that Ollie's doing a fantastic job, I have to say, online. I know it's not competitive of yours, but the BBC kind of guy.
We wrap our arms around each other. Don't worry about that. The more coverage that the non-league can get, that's fine. You know, Ollie and I message each other fairly regularly, so it's a team effort. And that's what I'm constantly banging on. That's what non-league needs to be about.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So from our perspective, we're moving forward very quickly. Once the website's up, everybody will be able to see what we have planned and structured already. But we've got big plans, but we can't say too much, Tim, to be honest with you, until, you know, it's actually concreted. So
yeah. Now, looking a bit further afield, even at non-league level, we've seen backroom staff multiply in recent years. From it used to be like just a gaffer, his mate was the assistant, and maybe there was a guy with a magic sponge. But now there's a whole team. There's the physio, there's the fitness guy, there's the dietitian, the rehab. But even so, mental health still not.
Defensive coaches as well.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a man that puts some blue tack up on the wall just to put the tactics up nowadays. But yeah. Mental health still not being embraced as much as the physicality. Yet you look at, I'm a big information junkie. I love to read books. I love to watch documentaries. And you look at the top level of sport, whatever sport it is, and we know that it's that kind of expert that helps make greats make those biggest leaps. So, do you think that that's ever going to change in non-league?
I think it's changing in society. I wouldn't put non-league in that bracket. But that will be part of it. I think, yeah, it's spot on. It's a great point, Tim, and I'm glad you mentioned it. It's so, so important and still gets forgotten. Even at the very top, to be honest with you, Tim, I know people at the very top in big clubs and they have it in place, but whether they're the right people, I don't want to down the PFA, Sporting Chance, as you well know. I've used them myself. But it's location-based. So whether you're seeing a counsellor or a psychologist, that you haven't got that rapport with that person and there's no real connection. And when you're dealing with something, you know, so important like the mind, that connection has to be there. It might not be us, Tim. Well, I'm not saying that we're gurus, but at least we've played the game at non-league level. We understand it. We understand the ups and downs. You know, I'll let Dom carry on from there.
Yeah, because for me, what I find is that it's finding the specific person who can tailor for that individual. And going on for what Dean said, we've been through the pyramid of non-league and we understand how people think emotionally, more importantly than anything else. It's not really about mental health. It's about normalizing how people feel about the situation they're in. And yes, it's on the mental health spectrum, but it's more about the everyday thoughts and feelings and behaviors that people exhibit, which is leading to a more negative thoughts. So it's more about that. And what we find, because we've lived it, we've experienced it, we've had the highs and the lows, Dean's gone higher than I have in the football pyramid. But yeah, we've been there, we've done it. And with myself, I've been working with mental health when mental health was something which really wasn't spoken about. So now to see it every day on TV, on the radio, I'm really happy about it. But a lot of organisations are out there and doing mental health as like a tick box exercise,
yeah,
and not really digging deep into what mental health really is for each individual person who's experiencing it at this stage.
And I think that's important because, you know, we're all complicated beasts. You know, everybody's different and everybody takes to people in a different way. I mean, both of you probably had gaffers that you enjoyed working with and others that you certainly didn't, and teammates are alike. I mean, if we now, it looks like, you know, step three, step four football, it's unlikely we're going to get football at that level now back until maybe the new year. But yeah, there's a review the 16th of December. But realistically, we've got a whole set of players that have been desperate to play football. They've had 4 weeks where they haven't been able to even train. During the next few weeks, they're going to be able to train, but they're not going to be able to play competitive football. And that's at the same time where they might be having issues at work with, you know, the slowdown. There's also the issues of Christmas, which always is a complicated affair anyway, particularly as a footballer. I'm sure there'll still be training sessions over the Christmas period, which will cause, you know, problems with loved ones and whatever. If there was one piece of advice that both of you could give to footballers going into this next period, what would it be?
Don.
Oh, thanks, Dean. I would say, it's hard to say to have an attitude of gratitude, but just have more balance. Because even though we're going through a bad time, there's things you need to appreciate, which you do have. So maybe it's family, maybe it's a situation where you may not be made redundant, you may be at work at the same time, but definitely appreciating the little things you have in life at this stage. Which again is health or the ability to go out to the park and jog and just really just try and get a balance and just realign where you are moving forward in your life, what you need to achieve and what you need to do in the next coming months over the, or even Christmas period, to set yourself up right for the new year. I know that's more than one thing to do, but I'd say just get a balance and really just try and get attitude and gratitude to where you are right now.
I've got one thing, just do something every day that makes you happy.
Oh, I like it. I like it. And obviously, you know, I've got you guys on because you're trying to build this new network, and you say, you know, there'll be more coming out in the coming weeks and that. But it is important that I always say in any environment, but particularly in football, a lot of people miss the banter, and that's going to be missing. The dressing room banter is going to be missing over the next few weeks. So it is important to build the team around you and have that support network. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, how could they get in touch and sort of find out what you're going to be doing over the coming weeks?
Tom, do you want to take that or shall I?
Go for it. You go for it.
Well, like I said, the website, hopefully, yeah, we're looking at a couple of weeks and all the information will be on there. Otherwise, we're on, as you well know, Tim, we're on social media. So please get in contact, you know, whether that's through the email, which will come through to both of us. That's the easiest way to contact us directly. But, yeah, fire into my DMs. I haven't got a problem with that. Yeah, so on social media platform at the moment.
And I'll make sure that gets retweeted. Dom, sorry.
So I was going to say, it's info@footballflow.co.uk, the email you can get us on if you've got anything which you think is quite urgent, you just need to speak to. You can find us on social media, which is, I believe, Football Flow UK. Is it Dean? The Instagram? Yeah. You'll find us on Twitter as well. So we're on that as well.
Well, chaps, thank you for giving me some time on an important Thursday evening for you both. But I've been following the journey, and I will be continuing following the journey. We will get you back on once things are up and running fully. But I think it's important, particularly in this week with the announcements that we've had, and yeah, heading towards Christmas, that people understand that there is a support network out there, and it is okay to put your hand up. And you don't even have to ask for help. You just might need someone to chat to.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
And sometimes the thoughts that you aren't thinking as well sometimes aren't as bad as what they are, if you can just normalise it and have someone to really just really chat to, which we're here to do anyway.
Well, I think it's someone to normalise it, really, Dom, isn't it? That's more to the point. But really appreciate your time, Tim. I really appreciate having us on.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to speak to you, Dean, and also you, Dom. And hopefully we'll meet up very soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank
God bless. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests, and thank you to everybody for listening, as ever, wherever you may be. It is the Football Content Awards next week, Tuesday night, I believe. Not the red carpet at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as planned, but now a virtual event, now live at 6 p.m. on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. Fingers crossed for all of the non-league contingent in there. There's a good selection, some good people in there, and some great content to view. And it's an important recognition of non-league within the wider Football Content Awards. So keep an eye out for that on Tuesday evening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson's there at Dave Anderson 78 and myself at Tim Fuel. And plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Deezer, on TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there too for the archive of the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, which hopefully, who knows, maybe it might be easier to speak to some managers on their own in the near future. Hopefully, Dave will be bringing the non-league gaffer tapes back very soon. Stay alert, stay safe, enjoy the football as much as you can. Take some heed that we need to support our clubs, we need to support non-league as a whole. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.